way, my name is Amy Scruggs, and after 20 years in business development, sales, and the mortgage and real estate industry, as a touring recording artist, spokesperson for the veterans, TV host, and recording artist, I have combined those careers into a passion that I love, helping other professionals. And I am so thankful for what I'm able to do. And we're going to discuss some of that today. But that's who I am. And it's a lot. And I am so thrilled to be a part of this show today.
Amy, it's exciting to have you on. Amy and I have been getting to know each other for the last year plus. We've connected probably through social media. LinkedIn, I think, might have been our first connection. Whether you know it or not, you've coached me a lot. I've watched a lot of the things that you do, and you've coached me on how to be a better podcaster and interviewer. Amy and I were talking right before we went on that we're in that era now. Anybody that's listening or watching today, you now have to focus on your on-camera presence. You may not have thought that before because you never thought of yourself as an on-camera personality. But if you're on a Zoom call or a Teams call or any of these other video chats, we're all on camera now. So I guess we'll start right there. There's so many places, even in just your own self-introduction there about your background, Amy. Because we are now really on camera more, we're doing this on Zoom today. What have you noticed that people don't do well that they need to improve on? Are there little ticks or little idiosyncrasies that you've caught that you're just like, oh, they need some coaching on this? What would be kind of that big low-hanging fruit types of things that you've noticed that we should work on?
Ed, we could spend a whole hour on this.
Probably.
It's exactly right. There are those identifiable human nature things that take place. And it was interesting because I really discovered them when I was hosting television. That's when those first things, I had 5 years of hosting a show and having those interviews with other professionals and noticing those common trends. And first and foremost, number one, it comes down to self-awareness. Where those insecurities lie and where it's coming from is a lack of knowing how we represent ourselves, if our message is on point, how we represent our business or our nonprofit or what it is we're about to share, not preparing those talking points. And the self-awareness of, did I prepare? Am I confident to speak about this subject? Because if you can step into that confidence of knowledge base, it also helps override being on camera. But a lot of times we have individuals and professionals of all industries who don't take time to watch it back, to identify how they represented themselves with their body language and in verbal skills. And so we can touch into a lot of that, but the self-awareness would be number one. And there's so many categories that fall under self-awareness, like anything else.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people say, how are you not nervous when you get up in front of a group or an audience? And for me, it's all about confidence and prepared, being prepared, as you talked about. Yes. If I'm prepared on a topic, and whether I know more about the topic than the audience or not, doesn't really matter. If I'm prepared and rehearsed and, to your point, self-aware, then it certainly helps me with my confidence levels a little bit. You alluded to hosting television show for 5 years. Amy has hosted programs on CNBC. She's been, you're in San Diego now, right? You've done a lot of television down there in your local area in San Diego, but also nationwide. Talk about how... We'll talk a little bit about that career, first of all, but also how do you go? I know a lot of people who have gotten off TV because they just couldn't handle the nerves, or they couldn't handle, they didn't feel, whether the self-awareness made them too aware and they didn't think they were doing a good job, or they just couldn't handle it for whatever reasons. How did you handle that? And what got you into that? And just what are some things you learned in those 5 years that apply to what you're doing today?
I had to definitely, first of all, with that self-awareness, take that assessment. I had to be comfortable watching it back and honestly critiquing myself. And I found out at the beginning, I didn't realize that I had like this permanent scowl in my forehead from raising teenagers for so many years. What the hell are you doing look on my face all the time. I had to get rid of that. So identifying even my resting face, which I teach a lot about, is that resting face and what that looks like. But for me, having that opportunity to sit in front of so many professionals. The basis of the show is just doing interviews, back-to-back to interviews, kind of like what we're doing here with the podcast, where you're meeting so many people. And I would have that chance in the driver's seat in studio. And a lot of them at the time were also over Skype. This was pre-Zoom. So right. I'm going to reference Skype. But I realized, wow, how fast is my network growing? How great is this? Because I had a beautiful opportunity of taking that professional on the other side who I could tell was nervous, who maybe didn't quite craft in or prepare their talking points. They just kind of showed up. And I would have a couple minutes before that interview to say, I'm right here. follow my lead. Okay, tell me exactly what it is. What's your call to action? Who are you trying to reach? Where have you been? Where are you going to? Is there anything you don't want me to ask you? So identifying some basic questions at the beginning that they would share with me would allow me to basically spoon feed them our time together. And when I would see somebody go from maybe stumbling at the beginning to actually having more clarity and providing a great interview that can help their business or nonprofit, there was such reward for that. I loved it. And yeah. I'm like, all right, bring me the next, bring me the next. And I learned how to utilize more vocabulary, how to breathe in between, how to be an excellent active listener, because an interview can go off the rails very quickly. Somebody can go down a rabbit hole and you know it's a 4-minute interview and you're never going to get that back. So how you gently guide somebody back in, active listening to see where they're going to bring them back, or maybe follow that. Wow, they're going somewhere that I think is really of value. I'm going to go off the sheet now and we're going to go that direction. And it was a really great challenge for me mentally. And what I didn't realize at the time was how many incredible tools that I was learning that would become a part of what I do every day. We didn't know COVID was coming. Right. I didn't know the entire world was about to go on camera like we're discussing for everything. And wow, here I have this experience that I'm able to bring to anyone at any level of their career.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about that. I've done a lot, you know, your episode number 91 for me. So that's, you know, that's more than many podcasts, but not nearly as many as a lot that I admire. But, you know, I've done a couple of these and I like to think that hopefully the questioning is getting better. And what I try to do is I try to script the interview as much as possible beforehand and then scrap the script and just really internalize it. I mean, I have 3 pages of notes and things that I want to talk about with you, but the interviews that I think have gone the best are the ones where it's just a natural conversation. I always joke that it's kind of like just 2 friends having a conversation over a cup of coffee. And anybody that watches and listens to this interview can hopefully feel like they're that third chair sitting in that same conversation. And the question they want to ask hopefully is the one that I'm about to ask, or the answer they're thinking you're going to give is the one that you give.
Right. Curious. Have you ever had one go off the rails a little without naming names that you realized you kind of had to pull the wheel in and bring it back?
Probably 90 out of 90 so far at some point. And it's mostly me. I mean, one of the things that I try not to do, and this is something that you coach and you teach, and I've learned from you as well, is rather than trying to anticipate what the answer is going to be and then building your question around what you think the answer is going to be, actually listen, because the answer might be different than what you're expecting. And when I go into not just these interviews, but even if I'm talking to someone in a conversation, like I had lunch today with a prospect that I don't know very well. And I had a lot of things I wanted to ask her, but I really just based it around 1 or 2 questions and then let the conversation go from there. And my old podcast producer, Todd Frazier, taught me, you know, don't overscript. I would go into these interviews with 9 questions handwritten out. And he's like, 3 or 4 bullet points. You know, if you don't look at the bullet points and it doesn't trigger your question, then you're not prepared.
Oh, excellent. Excellent advice. That's it right there.
Yeah. Just over, you know, prepare so much that it doesn't look like you prepared. That it's just a casual conversation.
I had a guest come in one time with 2 pages of notes for me for a 4-minute interview. And I said, I respectfully need to let you know this is not how this is going to work. So you're going to choose 3 key words out of this 1 page. And I promise you, I will take you there. And this individual, the face just dropped it. No, I need this. I guarantee you this organically come about, but there's no way I'm going to give you my best if you've just handed me a novel, because that's not how this works.
Yeah. A lot of people before they're a guest will ask me, you know, will send me some questions, and I appreciate that. And I would do the same thing if I were in their shoes, but a lot of times they don't. Yeah, we'll talk about whatever. And oftentimes those are some of my favorite conversations because it's so casual and it's so authentic. Mm-hmm. The person I had lunch with today asked me, do you do like a preparation call in advance? I said, yeah, sometimes. You know, I've interviewed of the 90 or so guests I've had, many are people I know really well. So I, you know, just hit record and go. Others, you know, are somewhere like you where I know you a little bit. And then there's somewhere I don't know them at all until we hit record and we start. And those are the ones I sometimes get more nervous about because I want to make sure that it's not only valuable for you and your time, but obviously, you know, we've got thankfully thousands of people that listen to this now. And I love you know, feedback that we get of, oh man, I love that interview with Amy, or I love when you talk to so-and-so and ask that question. And at the end of the day, to your point, everything we're doing is for the audience. When did you know that you wanted to get into this line of work? I mean, you've been in the media, you've done a ton of coaching. You're a great coach, personal experience here. When did you know that this was the route? Cause we're going to get into your performance career, your singing and all these other things too. And I'm actually going to, with your permission, use some of your music as I edit and record and get this ready to post. Cause I want,
I would hate that. So please.
I know. Right. Oh, you're going to promote me. Oh, darn. Shucks. Right. Yeah. No, I'm excited. I already think that, I know the title of this podcast too, that her hit single is called What If It All Goes Right. And I'm excited for the audience to hear that and see the video, which we'll put up on the video aspect. But when did you know that this life, the media personality, the executive presence, that coaching and so forth was the path you're going to be on?
You know, what's fun is when things present themselves to you, maybe when you're not looking. And for me, I could say that was the answer. Hosting television, loved it. It was interview. What was interesting is some of the regular guests, this particular show, we had certain individuals would come on once a month to give their new update. And they were a part of the show on a regular basis. But they were calling me privately and saying, can you help me to improve? And so I just started saying, all right, I'll talk to you for 15 or 20 minutes. Next thing you know, my phone is blowing up with prior guests saying, you made me so comfortable. That's the best interview I've ever done. How did I do that? And can you help me? And I realized, I think people might need this. And again, this is prior to COVID. This was those 2-3 years before COVID. So I was doing some coaching on the side in between hosting, just because I was getting requested to do so. I had never thought that that is something that I would do. And then COVID happened, of course, studio shut down, everything shut down. And instead of going into a Netflix binge, I really realized that was the time to say, is there a process to what I've been doing? Because I was really going off the cuff, just based on the request of doing it. And that's when I sat down and put the pen to paper and actually wrote the book and created the steps that allowed me to identify what my own program is, because it wasn't coming from a textbook from somewhere else, but from hands-on experience from doing it myself all those years touring, as we're going to discuss. Yeah. But really that time in the studio, field shoots and in studio interviews, that allowed me to dive into really the human behavior of it. Because I wasn't just somebody who used to be in broadcasting and I only do this certain thing. There was such a diversity of guests. And there was so much of just common human behavior. And once I identified that, I was able to identify what were some of those workarounds, where were some of those places that we could find improvement quickly. And that's how it came about. And then during COVID, you know, everyone went on camera. I was doing workshops and said, okay, I think that there's something here. Talk about perfect timing. I mean, it was awful when we went through in COVID. I'm still sad I'm not in the studio. I mean, there's still repercussions of that and a loneliness of living behind this screen now that we didn't used to have to do. But I can meet such amazing people now. And I'm so thankful for the journey that led me here to bring something so unique to professionals of all industries.
I had that conversation with somebody just the other day, two things on COVID, not to stay focused on that, but I think that it made most things that were good better and most things that were bad worse. Mm-hmm. Relationships, profession, careers, everything. I mean, my career took off because of COVID, you know, being, and especially the podcast career. I had done 8 episodes in person, COVID hit, and then it just, you know, it went like, you know, for the people watching, I'm doing kind of the steady growth hand here in front of the camera, but then it did the hockey stick going up.
Yes.
You know, because everybody that was a no, I can't come to your studio in Anaheim Hills was, I can just sit here in my PJs in you know, Nova Scotia, Canada, and you can interview me like this. Yeah, I'm in. And so I got guests from all over the world, all over the country, all over the continent. The yeses became easier. But a lot of people didn't want to go on camera because they didn't have that confidence. They didn't have that self-assurance. You know, this is just two people having a conversation on a Zoom call right now, and it's being recorded. You talked about your book, Lights, Camera, Action. Easy title to look back in hindsight and recognize why the title. But talk about the title. I mean, obviously it ties into being on camera, lights, camera, action, boom, lights on, you're going. But talk about that title and just how that, I know that applies in your life more than just being on the news or doing television shows.
I think it's in life, we have to show up that way some days. There's a lot of days we don't feel well. We're tired. I have a gaggle of children. So for 32 years, my career has also been immersed in taking care of a lot of human beings. and so sometimes we just, all right, lights, camera, action, let's do it. And you have to sometimes go into that mindset. So it's really not about, yay, this is camera day and I feel fabulous and let's do this. There are a lot of times that I'm on, whether I'm a speaker or a performer, that there's a lot going on behind the scenes, just like everyone. Life hits us when we're not looking, but we still have to show up many times for others, for the sake of our careers, for the sake of our own well-being. And that's when you have to find that moment that you go, let's go. 3, 2, 1, and we're live. And yeah. I think that's very prophetic about life because we have to do that.
I get nervous before I hit record on every one of these podcasts because I just... if you're not nervous, you're probably not prepared or not doing it right. But I get nervous. Like I said earlier, I want to make sure that it's valuable for your time and valuable for those that are listening and engaging in this. You're obviously a people person. And I hate that term because we all work with people. You can't work and not work with people. But
I don't know. I've met a few.
Well, no, I have too. And there are times when I'm not. There are times when I just don't want to be on camera and I don't want to talk to people. I'm as extroverted as they get. But I think that these last 3+ years have taught me that I do kind of like my alone time, given the option of working from home or working out in an office with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. I'll oftentimes opt for the former, working from home. What is it about? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're all that way. What is it about what you do? I guess I'm going to back up and ask this question differently, because you're an executive coach, you're a media personality, you're a mom to a gaggle of kids, as you talked
about.
They're
all grown now, but that makes it even harder.
Same with us. 4 grown and 9 grandsons and more on the way. It's never ending. And I love it. Obviously, you're an entertainer. You're a singer. If I'm on an elevator with you for 30 seconds, how do you describe you?
You know, interesting that the singer came first since I was 3. So the first thing I usually say is recording artist and professional media and communications coach. I still put the music first because that little girl, the heart of who I am to the core, the music was always first. Now, life dictates that we go down other paths and make sure we're making a living and have other opportunities and other things to shift into. And that's definitely the case for me. But it always came back to the music that was such a large anchor point. And I didn't see it any different as in growing and being educated in it as I would be in any other industry. So I'm always pursuing to know, have more knowledge about the music industry itself, understanding music itself, appreciating, performing it when I can. Yes, I wish I was out on a Prevo touring. I loved my years of touring, but then I also, with this music release that I just did in 2022, I did not take an opportunity to put a tour together because I realized I'm old and tired and that was not, I remembered how hard it is sometimes going on stage at 10 o'clock at night. At 10 o'clock, I'm done.
PJs and remote control or pillow.
Yes. Yeah. So as much as I love the performing, I really want to do major shows, like, you know, for a nice lunch crowd. I think that's where I'm at now. So identifying where I'm at in life, but still absolutely loving the music and putting that first. So I introduce myself first as a recording artist. And then second, definitely as a media professional, a communications and media coach professional, and how I've tied those in. And I try to make it as quick and to the point as possible.
So you need to write songs for kids so you can go sing in like kids' bookstores at 11 a.m., you know, be done by noon.
Well, I have to tell you, it is pretty fun that I do a lot of keynote speaking at Rotary clubs because they are all lunch meetings.
They're all lunches. Yep.
If they have a piano, I perform as well. So I have found my niche.
I love that. That's good. There you go. Some of the artists that you've traveled with and opened for include Trace Adkins, Clint Black, Charlie Daniels, Little Texas, Hal Ketchum, Phil Vassar, the list goes on.
Yes.
Most of us listening today, myself included, we've all imagined that life. Most of us have never lived that life. Obviously, as you mentioned, by 10 o'clock, you're done. And certainly in that life, you're not done by 10. No. Talk about what you loved about that, what you learned. And then I have a word that keeps coming up for me about you, and I'm going to save that for after your answer.
Saving it after.
Yeah.
I think, I know this is probably not what you're expecting me to say, but with large expectations like actually. That, with that kind of touring, that kind of opportunity to work with some of the greatest of artists of all time, I think that the humbling was larger than I expected it to be. Going to Nashville the first time, woo, was that humbling.
Wow.
Because I went to Nashville first thinking, I'm a great singer. I've been doing this my whole life. And you get to Nashville and you go, oh my God.
Everybody's a great singer. Everybody else.
And they've been here and they understand it. Wow, I don't fully understand this. Mm-hmm. Going out on tour with those kind of artists and that kind of team, I was not able to have the size of a team. I didn't have, you know, three semis and a crew. We were really grassroots at how we were doing this. I was touring with kids with me. My children were with me. Wow. So I'm working a car seat at the same time. I'm trying to make sure that my rider requirements are being met. It was very, very humbling. And what I remember was just being very grateful for every opportunity. I felt like the large stages were the reward for the hard work behind the scenes. For maybe we did a lot of charity, a lot of veterans events. So there were no cameras, nothing following us. That was just our heart serving. And then stand on a stage to a sold out audience for Trace Adkins. That was the blessing. So for me, there was so much that I was noticing of the hard work. There were some moments on tour. There were some of those moments that were the scariest, most painful times when you're responsible for that many people. But on the flip side, there are moments standing on those stages when you win over that audience and you feel the team and the camaraderie of the musicians with you. And of course, my oldest son being one of those musicians, the pride to share those stages with my son is like nothing I can describe. And to find a moment where we are all connecting, where maybe a song resonates to the entire audience, to hear them singing along with you, to see us honoring the veterans in a moment of certain parts of our show, we would bring veterans up on the stage. It was absolutely beautiful. And I would do it all again in a heartbeat. I would love to experience just a few of those moments again in a heartbeat, because it was magical.
Was there so many questions come up, and I jotted a couple down as you're talking, but I'm going to stick with this one first. Was there that moment on tour, on stage, on TV, where it just clicked and you just thought to yourself, I can do this?
Yes.
And this is because we have those moments. I'll give my personal quick example in family business. I started running a center for family business at a local university, Cal State Fullerton, in 2011. And honestly, and I've told my closest friends, it wasn't until about 15 or 16, so 4 or 5 years in, where I literally went to work one day and thought, I got this. This isn't hard. It's not always easy, but I don't have to freak out anymore. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Was there that moment, either on stage or traveling, or, you know, talking contracts while fastening a kid's seat in the back seat, or on stage with Trace Adkins or whoever, where suddenly you just had that overwhelming feeling of, man, I got this?
Yes, there were several moments like that stand out. And to segue real quick, I can relate to being in the family business because that's what we were. My oldest son was my lead guitar player. My kids were running the merch table and loading trucks. We as a family were out there touring and representing my brand and also what we did for the veterans. And so I think that definitely was the case. There were several moments that really were the I've got this. Now, Clint Black being the first. That was the very first national stage that somebody gave me a chance. And a monsoon came in that day. And they tore down the stage. We were stuck. Show was going to be canceled. And Clint had invited me to come over to his bus to meet him since we were riding out a storm, which was just so classy.
Wow.
And they let me know, hey, the storm is starting to pass, but due to timing, we're sorry, Amy, but you're not going to be able to perform. Now, mind you, this is my first big show, 4th of July. And they told me I wasn't going to be able to perform. And Clint whispered and went off to the side, and I saw him whisper, and he came back and they said, okay, Mr. Black has said you're still performing. You get 3 songs and 1 band member. Will you still do it?
Wow.
I said, yes. Yeah. So he vouched for me. He didn't know who I was, but he knew that this moment he sensed meant everything to me. And that's when I knew, wow, this is really happening, because I knew I could leverage that. I knew that having that stage with Clint Black, someone of his celebrity, some of his background, to say, I'm going to believe in her. It was so powerful to go on to the next and to the next, to the next, to the next. And on the other side, with my work with the military and veteran community, would be in 2011 at the 10-year anniversary of 9/11 at Dodgers Stadium, when on request of the Los Angeles Army Recruiting Battalion, they requested that I be the one to sing the national anthem for that reverent ceremony. before the game. And I thought, wow, all the work with the veterans, the ones behind the scenes in the vets post or dedicating a street in the middle of a highway somewhere in Bakersfield, all the different places that we went to honor the heroes while we were out doing what we were doing. They chose me to stand there at that 10-year anniversary. And at home plate, that was the one then that my daughter, who was only six at the time, she was able to stand next to me and hand over her heart. We honored our heroes for the 10-year anniversary. And it was just another one of those, wow, my work has made an impact. I'm not just a singer. Yeah. We've made an impact. And this was the visibility and the credibility of it. And that's where I really saw it come around full circle.
I love that. I'm huge on recognizing people who give us opportunities and mentors and those moments in our lives where someone believed in us.
Yes.
And the opportunity we have. I have so many things I could give thanks for, and I do. And we're recording this Thanksgiving week 2023, by the way, for those that listen to this next year, but we're recording it 3 days before Thanksgiving. And the gratitude that I feel for so many people that have given me a chance when I didn't feel like I deserved it. Clint Black could have just said, well, you know what? Tough luck, kid. Hopefully next time you'll get a chance, but he gave you that chance and that opportunity. Yes. And then here you are fast forward singing at Dodger Stadium with your 6-year-old next to you. And she's seeing mom in this element. And even though you may not be saying it, and you probably were, it's probably a ton of conversation, but in the story you just told, I'm picturing this little girl looking up at mommy singing in front of a packed house at Dodger Stadium on such a significant and reverent occasion. That's a memory that's going to stick with her forever, even though there may not have been any words shared there.
We have that photo still framed in my office and also in her room. She's in her second year of college now. So it was a long time ago.
Crazy, isn't it?
But what I was so proud of is she had been with me, touring with me since she was in the car seat, and had been to so many military and veteran events that as that ceremony started and the color guard came out, she didn't look at me. She instinctively knew to look at them and put her hand over her heart without being told. And all cameras went on her as I looked at the big screen as I'm about to have to sing a cappella.
How did you sing, right?
On my daughter. And I went, okay, don't look, Amy. Just don't look. And you can see the video on YouTube. And at the end, you see the tears just coming down my face because I was so thankful that at that young age, she was already instilled how to honor. And I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah. Talk to me about your passion for the military. It's a question I was going to ask 20 minutes ago, but I have to ask it now.
My father served in the military. My father was Air Force from 1961 to 65 in Plattsburgh, New York, which I recently just got to visit and finally see that spot where it meant so much to him. But my dad just raised me that way of honoring the military, regardless of what war is taking place at the time, right? It was never about world issues. It was about what's right, that you honor those who served of all generations and all decades. And I was practicing the national anthem on the fireplace with a hairbrush starting at 4 years old. I knew that that was going to be something that I did throughout my life. I knew it then. And so that just became such a huge part. And when it started actually in Ontario, where you are, back in 2000, I want to say seven, that I was going over to that USO office there at the Ontario airport. And I was bringing my children and just said, how can we serve? I wanted my children to understand serving. And so we would help clean up trash and serve sandwiches and food when the planes would come in, and just, we became volunteers as a family. It was only after that, that the director found out who I was as a artist after I'd opened for Clint Black. And that's when she said, we want you to start performing for some of our events. And that's what opened those doors and opened the doors with AmVets as well. But it came from serving first. I did not go there to say, I want to go perform for the military. I instinctively knew that was going to happen because I had known it since I was four. But it came about by just putting my heart out there first and showing my children how to serve.
So talk about affirmations.
It's so important. I mean, my goodness, because there's so many horrible things we can say to ourselves, right? And that's why when the What If song came my way, I thought, well, I've been doing that my whole life. We've had tremendous loss. The kids and I lost our home in 2011. That was devastating. We've had the loss of our band member, our dear bass player and dear friend. He dropped dead of a heart attack suddenly right after one of our shows. So we've had tremendous loss. And we can look at that and just hate the world for it and say, forget it. But there's that moment where you say, what lessons do I need to learn? How can I grow from this? where is this going to help somebody else someday? Yes, I'm still going to grieve. Yes, I'm still going to feel and go through the human things, but knowing that these lessons or these no's are leading me to the right yeses. And I've always instinctively felt that. I've always affirmed myself. It's okay if it's not today. I mean, I wanted a hit song when I was 30. I mean, in my 20s, I wanted a hit song. I wasn't even singing professionally yet, except for concerts in the park. In my 30s, my first trip to Nashville, so I want it today. And then it took me to 49 to get a hit song. And I went, that's why, because I had to go through A, B, C, D, E, F, and G.
Yeah.
Before I would have the message to go behind the song. I wouldn't have the message behind the song any earlier.
Yep.
Sometimes we have to walk the process, and affirming myself that the timing isn't mine, but it's going to happen as it's supposed to, has been a key component.
Didn't buy my house till my first house till I was 57 years old.
Wow.
And I'm 59, and I wanted to be a homeowner in my 20s, but I had to learn and gain confidence in myself that other people, my wife and others, already had in me. I had to gain that confidence, not just the ability and the money and the down payment and the credit score and all those boxes you have to check, but I had to believe inside that I could do it. And really the successes, and I don't even use that word very often for myself. I use it for a lot of other people all the time, but the successes and accomplishments in my own life, it started with belief. It always started with, I had to believe I could do this first before I could do it. Sometimes the belief kind of came at the same time. Mm-hmm. But the belief never came after. It always had to come before the accomplishment. So the word that I think about with you that I teed up a few minutes ago, and I think that this word, it's what you do for a living. It's what you're great at so many things, but it's something that you are great at. And I've known this from the first conversation and the first connection that we had. And it's a word that you can use to coach other people. And the word is presence.
Yes.
I think of that word presence with you. And I think of the dual meaning, present ending in the T, like being present or present gift. I don't really think of it that way, but certainly. But that presence, to have a presence, what does it mean to have in your line of work as a singer, as a coach, as a media personality, as a mom, as a wife? I mean, and I don't mean present like being present tense. We can go there in a minute, but mm-hmm. That presence, what do you think of, or what comes to mind for you when you think of that word presence?
One of the words I used often is learning how to be magnetic. Mm. You know, it's funny. I used to have as one of my business slogans prior, it was to be contagious, not competitive. Right. And then COVID happened and I had to change that.
Yeah. Change contagious, right?
I can't use the word contagious anymore.
One of the five big values my dad taught me is be collaborative, not competitive.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, get rid of contagious.
Magnetic. Yeah. Magnetic, and that presence, allowing people to see a confidence also with transparency and vulnerability. And that is a delicate balance for somebody to come across and say, I am confident. I'm comfortable in who I am. I can walk in a room and feel comfortable to go network and meet people, but also be approachable and transparent to the point that they see they're getting something authentic. Doesn't mean I'm not going to have boundaries. I mean, there's all of those different things that need to be in there. You're not going to be able to just come up and, you know, throw your arms around me. I'm going to have boundaries at how we shake hands and what we do and how we engage. But I'm also going to show that I'm approachable. And like you said, present. That means I'm using great active listening. And one of my favorite coaches, David Meltzer, has taught me over and over. And I know you've interviewed David, so you know exactly what I'm about to say, but to be more interested than interesting.
I love that. It's one of my favorite phrases from him.
It's amazing. And I say it over and over again to those that'll listen, because that's where that secret sauce is right there.
Yeah. People don't, it's the old phrase, you know, no one cares what you know until they know how much you care.
Yes.
You know, be interested rather than, or be, yeah, really to be interested in what people are saying. Mm-hmm. I always talk about how my favorite people are people who are authentic, people who are interested in not just me, obviously. We want to, when we're talking to someone, we want to know they're listening. Just like I know that when I'm talking to someone else, they want to know that I'm listening as well.
Yes.
But to be engaging, I use that term. I use acronyms a lot, and I built an acronym, and I'm not going to try to remember it. And it's on my computer, but I won't take time to look it up. But I love that term engage, because people know when you're engaged and when you're not. Mm-hmm. So teach those that are listening right now or watching today put your professional hat on for a moment. What advice would you give to someone that's having trouble engaging? They're distracted. I know a lot of people, they've got kids, grandkids, they've got lots of different, you know, responsibilities at work. They've got community responsibilities, and we're all pulled in so many different directions. How do you coach people to engage in the moment with where they are? It's easy to say it, hard to do it.
Daily habits, really, because I get it. I'm caring for my elderly parents. I have a gaggle of adult children who are more of a full-time job than they were when they were smaller. I have a husband. I have a big life. I'm on the board of 4 nonprofits, so I understand distraction that can happen. But there's a daily habit that says, what am I going to do today for my engagement? And we bring up social media because it is a good place to do that. When used correctly, it can be a valuable tool. The same way you and I met this way, where it was purposeful engagement, one of us reaching out, the other one taking that time to make a genuine reply and actually follow through with the next connection if we were both interested in making that connection. That's engagement. And so a daily practice of going through with my social media that's not about what did I post and did anybody notice it? And yes, we want people to notice what we're posting, but going through and just saying, hey, what's going on with those I care about? What about that, those professionals that I have connected with in these last years? Who was added to my list this year? I'm going to go in and just congratulate them on what they posted. Thank you for what they're doing in the community.
Yeah.
Great job on this. Congrats on your new grandchild. Just taking the time to be genuinely authentic and care and be interested in what everyone else is posting and have none of it have anything to do with what I have posted, what I'm going to post, or what's going on in my life. Creating engagement opportunities. And what I notice is that it brings me back to almost how I felt when social media first came out. Remember, we would just, oh, wow, look, there's my friend from high school. And oh, wow, hey, do you want to have lunch on Tuesday? Sure. Yeah. We really used it as this like chat room. And I still use it for that purpose today. And I find a lot of fulfillment come from that, where people know that I really do genuinely care, because I will put a personal message. You and I have done that with each other on LinkedIn, an actual genuine, wow, I really love that. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah. And I think that can make that difference in engagement when we're talking about virtual engagements, different than even in-person engagements, then to stop it. Remember a detail when you see someone again. Hey, I remember last time you were just going to visit your daughter up in, you know, Oregon. How was that trip for you? Taking the opportunity to remember details about people to show them we care.
That's a key right there. And I've been impressed with that with you, with, you know, stories or things that I've posted, how you've responded back with things. It's like, wow, this is nothing to do with what Amy does, but it makes an impact. It definitely does make an impact. And I'm not talking just about social media, but you know, you and I've never met in person.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you're a dear friend. I feel like you're somebody that I can text or call or email, and you're right there, and you have been every single time. And
I'm going to genuinely cheer you on.
And it's just that it's a testament to how doing the right thing for the right reason with people can build these strong relationships. I love that now that we're back, I won't say we're post COVID, because, you know, as I told you, my wife just had it. So the COVID's still going on and probably will be for decades, but we're in that post pandemic time anyway. I love going to events, and this happens to me at least weekly. And I went to like 6 events last week, and almost every event, someone came up to somebody and I either observed it or they were talking to me, and oh my gosh, it's so good to be in your presence again, or it's so good to be in the same room with you, or it's great to see you in 3D as opposed to on a screen.
Yes, and in many I have legs. Cases,
well, and in many cases, how many people I've connected with in the last even few months that I had never met in person, but I felt like I had a great relationship there. I'll give you one example, former podcast guest, Judd Wallenbrock. Judd, at the time that we connected on virtually on Zoom in 2020, was then the CEO of a winery up in Napa Valley. It was a winery that we were doing some work with before COVID, but that all shut down because everything shut down. But we stayed connected on Zoom. We had text messages, phone calls, emails, Skypes, Zoom calls, et cetera, for a while. And then fast forward to summer of 22, I was up in San Francisco on business, and we had a little harbor cruise, and I invited him and he came. It was the first time I'd ever met him in person, but we hugged each other like we hadn't seen each other in 10 years.
Yes.
And yes. You know, we really built those connections. So
it's so powerful.
It really is. And in that case, it was, and in many cases. And so in your line of work, back to the media side for a minute, I want to get to your music, and I want to be cognizant of your schedule as well. I know we're quickly running out of time, and I haven't gotten to my quote unquote script, like I joked that I wasn't going to do anyway. What advice do you have for people who are really having to engage via this medium that we're on right now. Most of us are doing our sales calls and a lot of meetings with clients and one-on-one sessions, never in person with people.
Right.
I mean, our worlds have gotten bigger because now to our point earlier, I can have a podcast with someone in Nova Scotia or a sales client in Vietnam, which I've done both since this all happened. How do you engage people when there isn't that interaction, interpersonal communication or relationship?
I love the topic because I, as well, the majority of my connections and network now are all virtual. It used to be that I was really entrenched, especially here in San Diego County and Inland Empire, really dedicated in seeing all in-person relationships and events and dynamics with that. And now it's all virtual. And so many people I will probably never meet in person. Mm-hmm. Those that I have the privilege of travel and being able to do that. And it's magical, like you just described, when you get to meet that person. I just did that recently, flew to upstate New York to finally meet with a colleague. I'm on her nonprofit to finally meet face to face and hug each other. There were just tears involved. My advice for creating those genuine virtual relationships is turn the camera on. I can't tell you how many meetings I'll get invited to where they just want to leave it audio only. Yeah. And I know that there are the times that that needs to happen. Of course, there are days that that has to be the case, but not every time. And in this world, if we want to make it the same as sitting across a table, when I teach professionals how to be more effective in their virtual meetings, you have to treat it as if you drove to that office, sat at their desk or at the boardroom, sit up straight, even that you're at the same table. I have to treat it looking in the eyes by looking in this camera and saying, I'm right here at the table with you, because I want you to feel that I'm looking at you and engaged and present as if we were present. And I'm noticing the disconnect is those that don't turn that camera on. They rely on the audio only, kind of like it's a phone call.
Yeah.
And you're never going to go that next level of seeing someone's expressions, their body language, their intentions, their inflections, all that goes with it. They can create a genuine connection, even if you never meet in person. And that's where we circle back again to this world is on camera. Mm-hmm. And the more effective we can be, the more genuine we can be, and the more we put actual time and effort, same we do it to anything that we want to become great at. If I want to be a good athlete, I've got to go practice it. I've got to train. I want to do something that's going to make a difference in my life. We need to train. And I think that it's time that those insecurities or fumbling through these virtual meetings, we're past it now. We're 3 years past it now.
Exactly.
It's time to show up and really show up present, just like you said.
I'm going to play your song now, What If It All Goes Right? And then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
What if that road that you're taking is a dead end? What if love leaves you all jaded and broken? What if that limb breaks your climbing out on? Yeah, what if it all goes wrong? That road is a beautiful soul drive. What if that love ends up lasting a lifetime? What if that limb holds you oak tree strong? What if this time nothing goes wrong?
Trampoline and touch the sky. Grab a cloud as it passes.
talk about that. I love how the song starts. It's, you know, well, what if I can't do this? What if this doesn't work? What if, and then you shift into, but what if it all goes right? And it's really upbeat and it's energetic and you're on a beach and it's beautiful. Talk about that message. I know it's more than just a song. I mean, to write a song, I come from a musical background. I've never written a song, but all four of my siblings have. I come from a very musical family. My brothers have been professional musicians and written hundreds of songs.
Wow.
I know the process from being around them just through osmosis. What was the process of that song?
Well, I have to tell you, it was given to me as a gift. There is no question that was a gift from prior good choices, I think, because we were on a song search, my A&R rep in Nashville, and he said, Amy, there's an opportunity. Would you like to come back to Nashville and record your dream project? And this was 2021. So we were still in COVID, but the blessing was that the producer was available and so were all the musicians. So yes. Don't have to ask me twice. Yes. So we started the song search process and reached out to all the great publishers throughout Nashville. And he represented me on my behalf. He went through 1,000 songs to present me about 300. So my aim my email box was just getting full of songs that were being pitched to me. So in this one email, I opened it up, there was 20 songs. And in the middle of that was this title that said, What If It All Goes Right? And I said, that's it. I hadn't heard it yet. It could have sounded like a polka. I didn't care. I was ready for whatever that was. I knew that that was the song I had been waiting for my entire life. That has been my message, even against times in my life when it was hard, when I'd have naysayers and people who mean well, close to it, just saying, yeah, but what if you fail? And what if that doesn't work? I'd been told that my entire life. And I felt like this was that opposite message that I have always internally screamed out. And so we heard that song. I said, that's it. Has to be on the EP. We went into the studio to record. I have to tell you, there was a moment in that studio that was magic. Even the producer, Fred Mullen, he's one of the greatest producers of all time from some of the biggest names and the biggest artists. He was the head of music for Disney for years. So you don't get any greater than Fred.
Right.
He pulled his headphones off and said, oh my God, everybody, that one's it. That was magic. That's a hit.
Wow.
And he did. He put his Disney magic on it. And I'm so thankful. The writer said yes to me having the voice and giving the mechanicals to be able to release it. And when it came time for a music video, I knew I wanted to do a video. And I knew I wanted to produce and do that myself because I wanted to show, especially at that time, coming now into 2022, I wanted to show individuals of all walks of life at all different scenarios having their moment of a win. That's why you see an older gentleman leaving a hospital happy, not going into one, right?
Yeah.
You're seeing, it starts off showing those bad what if scenarios that you cause pain. And then it showed everybody getting their win. And I just wanted it to be a song of hope, a video of hope. And I am so grateful that it is still out there resonating. It's still out making a difference. I get messages and emails and calls all the time of thank you for the message of this song. Thank you for the video.
So talk to that. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Talk to the person listening today that's really looking at troubled times ahead, or at least perceive that big thing out there. There's a lot of mental health issues today, higher than it's ever been. Suicide's higher than it's ever been. Divorce is higher than it's ever been. I mean, the mental health and the health issues out there are worse than they've ever been in our lives. I've got you by a decade or so, but we're of the same generation-ish. Use that what if it all goes right message to talk to those people for a minute.
I call it what if upping. And I'm actually in a nonprofit organization called just that, What If Up, where we take that circumstance and say, hey, this is bad. This is what I'm in. But what if I'm going to have a blessing come from this? What if through this hard time, and maybe I'm going to a support group, or I'm, you know, like for me, caring for my elderly father and maybe meeting with other families who are dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's, what if I'm able to learn from them that's going to make this easier? What if this time of darkness is going to open up the opportunity to find that job that I needed to have, that's going to be a better job that I wouldn't have found if I was still in this one? What if that struggle I'm having with my child right at this moment is going to help us be even closer when that child is older and help them better in life because we have this foundation to stand on? We call what if upping. What if this circumstance leads to a stronger foundation? And I have a what if up journal that I keep because I still, man, I got some doozy days. It is not all roses It's tough. But what if this is an opportunity for me to speak some positive life into somebody? What if this is an opportunity that I'm going to get what I've been asking for? It just isn't coming the way I thought it was going to. What if I have to have everything stripped down in order to get to that next place? What if this happened just because I'm supposed to sit down and be quiet and that's what's best for my body? Maybe I need rest. What if upping all of that will change that frame of mind? And I actually just finished a 5-week course from a neuroscience that described that what if upping can actually transform the brain.
Can you talk about a challenge that you've faced in your life? We've all had them, as you just alluded to. Mm-hmm. Is there one out there where you look back and think, I'm so thankful. I wasn't then, but I'm so thankful now that that challenge occurred, because here's what I learned. And maybe touch for a moment or two on who was there for you during that challenge to reach their hand back to you and pull you out of it.
I would say it was 2007 when the recession hit, because I made my living as a wholesale mortgage account executive all over Southern California, working with professionals, selling mortgage to the mortgage broker, representing the bank, loved it, provided me a great living, helped me provide for my home and my children. And the recession hit and it disappeared in a day. No warning, no nothing. And this was also the exact same month I had just had a full hysterectomy. Mm. So I was recovering, literally watching the news from a hospital bed as all of this happened.
Wow.
You could not have a lower moment than that. But I took that skill. I said, okay, I have business skill and I have my passion for performance. And when I recovered, that's when I put the band together and went out and asked for that business. And that's when Clint Black said yes to me. Hmm. And so taking that and making it a shift. And then when I lost my home in 2011, there were a lot of circumstances. Again, that recession was not easy. Yeah. Made the move from down to San Diego, starting over again, working in the real estate and mortgage world and going back out in sales while I was still performing and saying, this is miserable. How am I going to do both? This is crazy. But it led to me hosting a national television show for 5 years had that not happened. Hmm. So I'm so grateful for those painful times, and they were hard. We lost everything a couple times, but wow, look what I'm doing today. Look, you and I sitting like this today, having this conversation, hopefully somebody's hearing this today and inspired. Yeah. I had to go through that pain. I had to walk through that fire to what if up myself out of it. And what a blessing when I was standing in that recording studio in 2021 that I had dreamed of since I was three. I had dreamed of that studio in Nashville since I was three. And there I was standing in it. You can't make that up.
Yep.
And those highs are worth the lows.
Yeah. I love that. I've had those times. When I was young, I had a vision of being a general manager of a minor league or a professional baseball team. And I didn't specify the details of what it was going to be. And when I was 40, I was blessed to be handed the keys to a stadium and the reins to a baseball team and be the general manager. And there were several moments, but one in particular that makes me emotional when I stop and think about it, where it was the second year our team was good. We were competing for a championship and I was just walking around the stadium. And I remember where I was standing. I remember where the sun was. I remember watching the sun go down. We were one or two innings into the game. So the sunrise was still going on out in the horizon. And I stood where I could see the entire field and a stadium full of people. And I could see my parents there and my family there in their seats and watching just everything going on in the stadium and looking up at this beautiful, beautiful sunset and just having that moment of, holy crap, this is what I've been thinking about my whole life. And now I'm doing it.
Yes.
And, you know, I've gone on to many other things since, but in that moment, everything that I'd prepared for was that moment. Just like you sang the national anthem to your hairbrush at age four, and then you found yourself at Dodger Stadium at this military, you know, celebration. There you were singing it with your then 6-year-old little girl who was almost the age that you were when you were envisioning it. That's so awesome. Thank you for your time today. There's so many. This is part one of probably what will be many, because we didn't even touch on a lot of the things that we needed to. But like we said at the beginning, this is just a authentic, natural conversation that I think has been, I know it's been a blessing for me, and I hope it has been for you and for anybody listening.
Yes. What a perfect week for us to do this. You're right. For those listening later, this was Thanksgiving week, but thank you for reminding me to also be thankful. It's easy. I'm human. I get stuck in my stuff sometimes, but
reminded
me as well to step back and look at it from the top down to go, wow, I'm really okay. And whatever's ahead is okay. And I am so thankful for the fact that you and I connected the way that we did. And I see the lives you're impacting out there. I see the incredible work you're doing. I listen to the professionals that you interview. What an impact you are making on the world. And it's an honor to know you, and especially to be a part of the show with you today. Thank you, Ed.
Well, Amy, it's an honor for me. And just, I do consider, even though we've never been in this, to my knowledge, never been in the same room, maybe we have, and certainly we will. We are 100 miles from each other. But, you know, I look forward to that day when we do get to meet in person, give each other a big hug, but continuing conversations like this. So I'm going to ask you, and again, thank you. That really means the world to me, especially coming from someone like you and your presence, to use that word again. What's next for you? What's that big thing out there that you're excited about that you want to share with the world?
You know, I'm really loving the opportunity I'm having with Rotary International. I'm doing a lot of speaking, a lot of training for Rotarians and other nonprofits on how to become more confident, because they're trying to raise visibility, grow membership to, at the end of the day, make a difference in their communities. So if I, through my voice or my expertise now, can help those that are trying to make a difference in the world at various levels, to do it at a more effective pace, to utilize media, to utilize confidence, to represent and grow those efforts. I am so thankful for that. I'm so thankful to be a Rotarian like I said, the nonprofit leadership that I work with, to say, let's help you. Let's help polish it up, level it up, and let's go help you make an even greater impact with the passion and heart you took the time to put this together. Volunteers are out there on so many levels in every aspect of giving you could imagine, and helping them to become more confident in how they're doing it and let the world know that they're there can make a greater impact. And that's what I get to do today. And I'm very excited about it.
That's awesome. How do people reach you? People are interested in working with you and enhancing their abilities to present, or executive presence, or coaching, or media, or any of the areas we've touched on. And I'm going to put all your bio in the notes on this. And as we promote this, they're going to see all the beautiful things that you do. What's the best way for people to reach you?
Thank you. It's just Amy Scruggs Media. If you Google Amy Scruggs, Amy Scruggs Media, amyscruggsmedia.com, and all the social handles, Amy Scruggs Media, you cannot miss me. Luckily, I do not have a common name. So if you put in Amy Scruggs, I promise you will find me wherever you are. Spotify, Pandora, Amazon, LinkedIn, social media,
YouTube,
and of
everything.
Course, the websites with just Amy Scruggs. You can't miss it.
Well, thank you for sharing your heart. Thank you for sharing your music. Thank you for sharing your passion and the things that you do with me today and with all of us. And I'm going to end this interview like I end all my interviews, but I'm going to finish it this way and just ask Amy Scruggs, what's in your heart?
Gratefulness and reminder for everyone to be limitless.